Welcome to Coffee and Change. I'm Bill Kirst. As a business professional, a U.S. veteran, a lifelong learner, and an active listener, I help others navigate, understand, and adapt to our ever-changing workplace and world. As a third culture kid, I call many places home. Presently, Seattle is where I explore my creativity through the power of words and images. In this podcast, we journey with our guests, gaining knowledge and inspiration from their stories. Hello and welcome back. Thanks for listening. My next guest, Carson Heady, is a multi-award-winning growth sales leader at Microsoft, where he supports the tech for social impact as part of Microsoft Philanthropies. He's also a best-selling author of 5 books, part of the Salesmen on Fire series. Every time I talk to Carson, I learn something new. And this time, I learned about things we have in common, too. We were both teenagers in 1992, playing Super NES, listening to Queen's greatest hits on opposite sides of the world. This was a fascinating conversation and one that gives me a lot of hope. I hope you enjoy it too. Here's Carson Heady. Carson, welcome to Coffee and Change. It's been a long time in the making, friend. How are you?
Bill, I'm excited to be here. Thank you so much for having me. I'm doing well. How about yourself?
I'm doing great. It's believe it or not, it's been almost a year since we worked together, and a lot has changed, but in your world and mine. And I'd love to just start off by saying, like, how are you doing? 2024. I think since we last chatted, you're in a new role, you're doing more, you're doing, you know, all the stuff you're doing on socials and writing and authorship, and I'd love to talk about all that. But how are you doing coming into 2024?
Yeah, you know, excited. I think any new year begets opportunity, and you know, it's an opportunity to reflect. You know, what worked well over the past year, what didn't. You know, what are the things that I really want to achieve and accomplish this year? So, you know, I'm one of those people. I don't take the foot off the gas pedal too often. So I'm, you know, always trying to dabble in new things. And, you know, one of the great blessings that came out of last year was a new role opportunity. You know, I was tapped to lead the Growth Americas team for Microsoft Tech for Social Impact. And so, in essence, leading an organization that supports over 400 nonprofits in the US and Canada. And it's unbelievable. You know, we're the only commercial-like team in Microsoft Philanthropies. So the dollars that this team earns actually fuel Microsoft's philanthropic efforts, and we very aggressively incentivize and discount in the nonprofit space. So I get to do what I love doing for the greater good. So that's been incredible. Family overall is good, and you know, trying to write my 5th book. So lots going on, but wouldn't have it any other way.
Yeah, we're
going
to talk about that 5th book here, as well as book 1 through 4 in a minute. But firstly, thank you for doing what you're doing for the nonprofit sector. I will tell you, as someone who has benefited not only supporting nonprofits, but I have family members who used to work for nonprofits, including great organizations like Operation Homefront, military veteran organization. And they exclusively got benefits from Microsoft. And without those benefits, they were not able to achieve the scale and reach and benefit, you know, families and veterans. So firstly, as a veteran, as a service member, and as somebody who comes from a family of veterans, I just want to say thank you for that work. I know the impact means a lot to you. And I'm so glad.
Well, thank you, Bill. Thank you, Bill, for your service. And, you know, I really credit phenomenal leadership, you know, getting to work under Brad Smith. And, you know, he is a visionary. Yeah. Justin Spellhog, our VP, Kate Bankin, who is our CVP. It's very inspirational leadership with a very clear, focused mission. And it's very purpose driven. And I'm ecstatic to be a small part of it. And literally to get to do what I love doing, which is, you know, building and nurturing a sales team that in essence is collaborating with organizations to help them with their vision and achieve more with technology. It's fascinating.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's part of the reason you and I clicked so well when we were at Microsoft, because we're both so driven by that purpose and impact and, you know, connecting for the right reasons. I also wanted to mention, congratulations on the Chiefs. Were you at the Super Bowl?
I was at the Super Bowl. It's why my voice is a little off, but I am a lifelong 49ers fan. I'm a diehard 49ers fan. So I'm happy for the Chiefs. They're my second favorite team. They're my wife's first favorite. So I've been reminded many times over the last few days, happy wife, happy life. And very happy for the Chiefs. So the loss stings, but it's okay. I believe we'll end that 30-plus year drought at some point in the near future.
Yeah, well, one thing I was reading this morning that sort of made me chuckle and also like wince in fear. Somebody posted something this morning. You might have seen it on the socials. So it basically said 2020, and it said these two people were running for president. These two teams were playing in the Super Bowl. And then a month later, the pandemic hit. So they were kind of had this like, what's going to happen in March? So I don't know about you. I don't know if I'm holding my breath or not, but like, let's not have a repeat.
No, I would agree. I think we could all live without a repeat of those events. You said something too, Bill, that while now it's top of mind, I often cling to your statement around, all meaningful collaboration being built around that bid to connect. Yeah. And I think that's super valuable. I've really learned a lot around the value of just, and I owe my entire Microsoft career to it, just connecting meaningfully with other people and the opportunities that come about as a result of exploration. And I think that's the key, especially as I get older and, I'm a family man, it's all about experiences for me. And that's why we went to the Super Bowl. My wife had never been to Vegas, and we wanted the opportunity to see our two favorite teams. So it'll be something we'll never forget. Yeah. And I think that's the beauty of unforgettable experiences that you can have in that bid to connect.
Yeah. Did you take the girls or no? Just the two of you?
No, no. And I told my team, we're going to have a really good quarter. It sets you back a little bit to get tickets.
Just a tad. But,
just my wife and I went.
Okay. Well, I would love to chat a little bit about a couple of things. One is, you're a prevalent writer. I just published my first book. I think I sent you a copy. Thank you for that.
Yes. Congratulations.
Thank you. You were one of many, in the inspiration, for kind of your journey as both a, someone working in a corporation. This is your day to day, right? This is the thing we do that sort of pays the bills, but we also have our passions and our pursuits. And you have many passions and pursuits, one of which is writing, another which is, hosting a podcast, doing webinars on LinkedIn. So I would love for you to tell the kind of the origin story of Carson Heady, the writer, and how this story got birthed and these books came to life. Because I will say, a little bit of fandom here. Your story really inspired me to just write and self-publish and go. Amazing. And don't wait, don't hesitate, just put it out there. So thank you. And I'd love to hear the origin story.
I'm very grateful for that, Bill, because that's really meaningful for me. I like to say, and first off, I will also say my voice is slowly returning after the Super Bowl. So if it cracks or, fails on me, why. But I always like to say, the things that I've achieved or done, anybody can do them. I'm just a run-of-the-mill guy from the Midwest U.S., right? The things that I've done have always been around, how can I best serve others? How can I best have an impact? And what are my passions? What are my unique skills and superpowers? And how can I leverage them to elevate others around me? And the writing thing for me, it started very early on. I mean, I remember being in school and writing fictional stories about my friends and I all going into outer space or time traveling or whatever. I just always had this affinity for writing. Years ago, I ran a division of call centers for AT&T. And I, was featured in this this newsletter that we would do. I had a column in the newsletter. It was called Carson's Corner. And it was all about sales and leadership and things of that stature. And I realized I really enjoyed sales and leadership, and I really enjoyed talking about them and writing. And then I had always wanted to write a book. It just kind of the planets aligned, and I actually found myself out of work. I was in a division that went through some massive change, and it was one of the greatest things that could have ever happened to me. I found that through my greatest defeats in my life and career, like the greatest things have been the byproduct. And this was, I had some extra time. I wanted to write a book about sales and leadership, but there's a lot of them that are out there. And I didn't want to recreate that wheel. I wanted to do something very unique. So I actually wrote a book within a book, a sales book inside of a novel about a fictional character who wrote that sales book. And I created this fictional protagonist, infused him with some stories and experiences, and then wrote a book inside a book. And I sent out 968 query letters to agents and publishers. I got 15 replies that said that they would read it. 6 offered to publish it, and I picked the one that had the best distribution. So from there, Birth of a Salesman was published back in 2010. And what's amazing, Bill, is that that actually was the thing that made my resume stand out when I ended up getting my next job, where I made a relationship that led me to my next job, where I met the person that recruited me to Microsoft. Yeah. So I wouldn't be here if it wasn't for that. And that was kind of the impetus and the journey. But what's been amazing is I've just written and done these things over the years. It's challenging. You know, I have a full-time gig. I have a family, 3 kids. You know, there's a lot that, you know, we all have in our lives, but you just make time. And even right now, you know, trying to find the time, you know, I may scrap out a page or two in a day, and I call that a success, right? So I think the key element is just do and don't overthink it. You know, create something that's meaningful for you. And it's very quote unquote easy right now to create a book and publish. In fact, I've had more success from a self-published book, Salesman on Fire, than any of my other books. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's a testament to, you know, going out, creating, getting it out there. And I don't spend money on marketing. I leverage, you know, messaging and building a brand, having a podcast, as you mentioned, doing these things. You can take that little snowball that is an idea and turn it into an avalanche by creating connections with people, you know, creating videos and content, and ultimately creating brand. Those are the types of things that will get those things noticed. Mm-hmm. And, you know, as I said, I owe a lot to going on that journey all those years ago.
Yeah, I really appreciate, firstly, the important reminder of setting the intention, right? It's that aspect of, hey, I'm going to set the intention and I'm going to let the planets align or let the universe take care of me, as I know it will, because I'm putting a lot of heart into this. The other thing I think, which is really important that people hear, and I had the very same experience, and it wasn't planned, right? I went through a layoff. The book that I wrote would not be in the world today, but for that layoff. And when, you know, I recently met with, you know, some team members, had dinner with them, and I hadn't seen them, right, since that layoff. And many of them were kind of like, hey, how are you doing? And I'm like, I'm great. And a few of them actually didn't know that I wrote the book. And they said, well, what'd you do? And I said, I wrote a book. And they said, are you serious? And I said, yeah. And I said, where else are you going to put the grief? And I put it into writing. And it became this really sacred container for me. Now, mine was a little bit different because it was a book of poetry collections. It's a little bit different than a novel per se. But I think it met the same need. And one of the fascinating things is, like you described, it opens up this whole world to us to say I'm a published author, because now nobody can take that away from me. And I have so many more books in me, right? I've had a few people reach out, when's the second collection coming out? When's the first novel coming out? And once you've broken through that sort of self-doubt that I think a lot of times the world can place on you, you have a lot of ideas to share, and it's really contagious.
So well said. I think the key element is just making the decision that you're going to do it. And I didn't write it because of wanting royalty checks. And I didn't write it with the thought of, hey, this is going to sell a million copies. I wrote it because I felt like I had something to say. And maybe yours and my book is somebody else's blog, right, or blog, or anything that they choose to do, or creating music. Mm-hmm. You know, I think the key element is, you know, you have a lot of power in your story. Yeah. Your story is, you know, what you create and how you choose to put it out there. And if you'd have told me 10, 15 years that now I'd be, you know, having over 300,000 followers on social media, or that I'd be blogging almost daily, or that I'd be creating this content, or, you know, co-hosting two podcasts, I would have not believed you. Mm-hmm. I think the key is just be open to these experiences and where they can take you. They're very enriching. I mean, that's how you and I connected. Yeah. Was, you know, just mutual work that we were doing and putting out there into the ether. It's been very, very rewarding. And I'm so grateful for the opportunities that it opens. It's been very impactful in my life and also in my career. And that's why I think the key is, to your point, getting past that limiting fear, yeah, those limiting beliefs.
Yeah. And I mean, we can turn seven different ways on seven different days and find reasons for limiting beliefs. It's that one where you place a bet on yourself. And I remember thinking, when I was going through the self-publishing process, which, you know, I have an intention at some point this year to kind of do more of a solo episode to talk about that process, because it was extremely eye-opening. And I'm curious what your experience was like. For me, it was a little bit, it was a test of faith, right? As you move along the stages, you know, it's kind of like you and I both know the sales stages that happen across a sales system. Yeah. As you move through those stages, you're like, I'm getting closer to the deal, right? I'm getting closer to being able to close this. And I published mine through, you know, Amazon Kindle Direct Publishing. And you get to that very end, and it just gets really complex really quickly. And you're this close to the finish line, and there's like seven things that you don't know where they went wrong. You have to go upstream to go downstream and so forth. I'm curious, was it like that for you? Because I think it was probably even more complicated back then.
To a degree. You know, I was fortunate because a lot of the file formats that I had utilized with my first published novel, I was able to kind of rekindle or recreate, yeah, some of that. But, you know, to your point, you know, I think some of the things, you know, there are frustrations. You know, you feel like, I've been in sales a long time, and I always like to say, I think for every $1 million, for every zero that's in a deal, it's like you have that many more, you have like 10 more complexities or, yeah, stops and starts. You know, the closer you get to the goal line, is really challenging. But, you know, just from a formatting and files perspective, and, you know, making sure that you're like the back of the jacket,
the cover,
looks,
yeah,
right, and the pictures look right. And there's a lot of stops and starts. You know, it's not an easy process. And I think, you know, that's the thing. It's a testament, though, Bill, to your drive to see it through to completion. Mm-hmm. And, you know, at the end of the day, you know, I always go back to Napoleon Hill's Think and Grow Rich. Mm-hmm. And one of my favorite themes from the book is that the majority of people who succeed, they only succeed because they stayed in it past the point where most people decide to stop.
Yeah.
And so, yes, there are some, you know, eerily annoying steps that sometimes you have to take to get to where you want to get. But if you hang with it, and, you know, maybe sometimes you take a step away, you take a break, you clear your head, you come back to it, you can see it through to completion. And there's some arduous steps, but, you know, definitely worth it in the end.
Yeah. And the best things in life are worth that, right? When you think about, I mean, how many people, countless people I know that went through boot camp and thought, I'm never going to be able to get through this. And then afterwards they think back and they think, you know, I did that. And it's a little bit of an intellectual boot camp, I think, when you're a writer, because as you mentioned, for every paragraph we do write, there's probably 17 paragraphs we deleted. And you have to be very gracious with yourself in that sort of swing, right? Back and forth. So there's five books now, and are they part of a series? They build on themselves. And I'd love for you to talk a little bit about how that evolution of the character, because I love the concept of a book inside a book. It's a little Inception, and I geek out on that. So tell us a little bit, yeah, about how that builds.
It's a good analogy. So Birth of a Salesman is about a fictional sales protagonist, a young man in his 20s, named Vincent Scott. And he has some rich experiences and, you know, gets promoted very quickly. He has kind of the start of a phenom from a sales perspective, but he's yet to really earn his stripes. You know, he gets some kind of unfounded arrogance because he has some early success, and he learns some lessons the hard way. And, you know, throughout the books, they do build on each other to an extent, but they can be read standalone. The second book is called The Salesman Against the World. Same character, goes through different scenarios. And each one has a book inside the book, but each of the books inside the books have different themes and intents and purposes. I won't give anything away, but there's kind of a spoilerish element in number two. The third one is called A Salesman Forever. And I get these titles from just different pieces of pop culture. Obviously, Birth of a Salesman is a play off Death of a Salesman. Salesman Against the World is based off Man Against the World, which was a little known. It was on the Rocky IV soundtrack, but they didn't actually play it in the movie. But it's by a song by Survivor. And I just always loved that song. Salesman Forever is like Batman Forever. Yeah, it's kind of that decision to, you know, we always have these pulls to like go do something else. And I think at some point in all of our careers, we've had that pull to like, you know, hey, is this the right path for me? Should I go out and do this other thing? And so that's kind of what that is all about. And then Salesman on Fire was actually born out of one of the most challenging experiences that I've ever had in my career. And, you know, based on Man on Fire, the Denzel Washington mega movie.
Yeah.
That's where we're at. And then the one that I'm working on now is called The Show Must Go On, which is a song by Queen.
Yes, love
it. And a very compelling reason why. That song got me through the pandemic. That song got me through a lot of really gnarly situations over the last few years, because no matter what we go through, the show must go on. Yeah. I've got to sometimes bring myself back to this home office desk in the middle of a pandemic every day, when every day looks like and feels like Groundhog Day. And despite whatever mental or emotional challenges I'm going through, you know, I still have to bring my best self. And sometimes it's an act. Sometimes I'm, you know, barely holding myself together, but, you know, I'm leading, you know, large meetings of thousands of people and, you know, doing podcasts after just getting horrific news like seconds before. Mm-hmm. And I think we've all been there where we've got to put this armor on and this mask. And that's really what it's all about. Plus, I love the Freddie Mercury biopic that they did. It's those types of things. You know, I just it's really kind of embodied with that. And that's kind of the story is, you know, amidst your biggest personal and career challenges, how do you keep conjuring yourself back up every day and bringing your best self? So it really dives into that very deeply. The other thing, Bill, that I think is really interesting now is how AI is helping me in constructing the outline, how it's helping me going back, and I can take, you know, transcripts of podcasts that I've done over the last 5 years, and I can turn that into an actual paragraph with my exact words. Yeah. Those types of things are really helping me a great deal. I've churned out over 100 pages already just this year, you know, just working on it from that perspective. So it's been an amazing experience and an amazing run. I keep saying this is going to be my last one. I've said that on the last few. So I think, like you said, Bill, we always have more books in us. And that's been really emboldening for me.
I love that. There's a couple of things I just want to like grab hold of and run with for a second. So you, I don't know if you could see this sign to my left here is a Checkpoint Charlie sign, right? It's the sign that was over the Berlin Wall. And the reason I have that is it reminds me I spent 6 years behind the Iron Curtain when I was an adolescent. And I think about this aspect of, you know, like you said, pop culture references or references to music that were so key in our life. And, you know, you mentioned Queen. And when I think of the years I lived in Poland and Russia, right after communism fell, you know what the soundtracks were? Queen. And when Freddie Mercury died, I was living in Poland at the time. I asked my mom that, why is everybody crying? And she said, well, the lead singer of Queen died. And all I heard was Queen died. So I'm thinking the Queen of England died. And I'm looking around Warsaw, Poland, and I'm seeing all these posters that say Queen, 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 Queen. And so I go to school and I say, it's so sad that Queen of England died. And people are like, what are you talking about, right? And I had no idea. I had no idea the importance, the infusion of this music in and behind the Iron Curtain, what it meant to people. So then I moved to Russia and I discovered the soundtrack that is Queen, and it became integral to my life, my teenage life. And in Russia, we used to play Nintendo and Super Nintendo, Super NES, I think it was called. And we would just put on the greatest hits, the two CD collection.
You're kidding me. Because when I think about that, I think about the exact same thing as playing Super Nintendo as a kid.
Really?
I remember I would play like Final Fantasy.
Yes. Street Fighter.
Yep. And listen to the Queen soundtrack. Oh. It was a purple album.
Yes.
And it was like greatest hits, like 1 and 2.
Yes.
And I would listen to that like on repeat. And for me, it was always about, like, We Are the Champions is my favorite song of all time by them. And, you know, like, compare and contrast, like, nowadays, like, I listen a lot to Don't Stop Me Now. And,
yeah.
You know, I Want It All. And, I mean, it's just, there's not another sound, nor may there ever be, like, Queen.
So I love the fact that you and I were on opposite sides of the world.
Doing the same thing
with that. Wow. You're right. It's just like that velvet plush purple cover of those.
That's it.
Oh man. Like I can literally transport myself back to that. So I wanted to like start there and also just say like how amazing it is that you use those touchstones for the shaping and the framing of these books, right? It's to me, that's how you help people relate to things conceptually, mm-hmm. as well as in prose, as well as in stories. And I just love that. So I had to mention that. I had no idea that we were both doing the same thing on opposite sides of the world. Where were you at that
until
time?
Today, right? Like, this is the beauty of having these types of conversations. You know,
yeah.
I had no idea about that with you, but I also love how you alluded to, you know, some of the personal connections that you have, like even throughout a home office.
Yeah.
You know, I've got a picture over my left shoulder. It's a still from the movie The Color of Money. Mm-hmm. And I've got an article that I wrote of why The Color of Money is the greatest sales movie of all time. And there's just so many great analogies around that movie and life and career and just kind of that mentality of, you know, you're going to lose, you're going to get knocked down, but what you do after that and go, you know, going after the next opportunity or the one after that is what's going to define you. And I think those types of things, I'm always on the hunt for music and movies and just any kind of mediums that inspire.
Yeah. I want to shift gears a little bit and talk about the two podcasts that you host. Mm-hmm. One is around social selling and then the other is kind of like the Salesman on Fire type stuff. I would love for you to talk about this, but before you do, I want to tell people that either listen to it or haven't listened to it yet. This is my take on it. It is a curriculum on understanding the human dynamic disguised in a sales podcast. I don't know if that's fair or not, but every time I listen, and I'm not blowing smoke here, every time I listen, I'm like, mic drop, human dynamic. I've understood another thing about the behavior, the incentives, the disincentives, why we hold on to what we hold on to, trauma, hard conversations, like, it is a curriculum on life, Carson. I don't know if you know this. You probably
that's amazing.
Know, but yeah,
I love the way you framed it up. Like now you make me feel like I'm doing some kind of like great human service with that show. But no, I always appreciate you being on, Bill, whenever you can make it. I think what's interesting is my podcasting started out very much by accident.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I remember at the beginning of the pandemic, I was actually lamenting to a friend of mine. I was like, yeah, I really miss just sitting around talking about sales and leadership and culture. And then I realized I can do that literally with anybody, anywhere in the world at any time.
Yeah.
You know, with the power of technology, you can connect with anyone at any time. And what's amazing about sales is all about relationships,
yeah.
and resources and people and process. And, you know, at the end of the day, it's not about deals. Relationships beget deals.
Mm-hmm.
Building a foundation of trust and transparency with people is how deals happen. And knowing every resource that you have at your disposal to help empower and enable your customer to win, that's how you win.
Right.
And so, you know, we started doing these shows and just talking about sales, talking about leadership. And I was, you know, taking these recordings and putting them out on LinkedIn and trying to ask provocative questions and start a dialogue.
Yeah.
And it was amazing because a couple of things happened. One, not long after I'd written a couple of books, I started reaching out to, you know, pretty prolific sales authors and podcasters. And I would ask to be on their podcast and say, hey, I've got this book. I've got a pretty decent following as a result of it. And, you know, they'd book me on shows. And there was this interesting cross section because then, you know, a few years into that, I'd get requests to be on shows and I never had to ask to be on a show again. The other thing is when I started recording these clips and these shows and putting these things out there, I wasn't calling it a podcast. It was just a video recording conversation, trying to incite a conversation. And I had people messaging me left and right saying, I'd love to be on your show. I'd love to be on your podcast. And I kind of shunned and shied away from the title because I'm like, that implies commitment. You know, I'm a busy guy. I can't commit to a podcast. And how many times, seriously, do you see people that get this really robust like microphone and setup and they do like 5 or 6 episodes and then they give up. They don't do it ever again. So, you know, what's interesting is I kind of had this built-in demand for it. And eventually I embraced the title because of the branding element. You know, having a podcast, having these things that differentiate you are what ultimately can provide a lot of value and open more doors for you. You know, because of having these podcasts, I've interviewed very famous people, which is crazy to me. But, you know, some of them, you just have to ask. Like, think about who's on my dream list, and I've reached out to some of these folks and gotten them, which is crazy to me. And again, I go back to the snowball to an avalanche mentality. You know, you just need a domino to fall. I've built my entire career and frankly my sales process on probability and odds. I don't get a response from everybody that I reach out to, but if you reach out to 5, 10, 15, 20, 100, 500 people, you're going to get replies. And then you start to learn what works, what doesn't. You know, you can control some things in sales and, you know, you can control what you put in. You control your content. You control the quality of your message, the quantity of outreach, and the consistency by which you execute. And so I really started to be diligent about that and disciplined. And what's interesting is then I was asked to co-host 2 podcasts, one being what has now become Mastering Modern Selling. It started out about social selling. Now it's all about mastering modern selling. And then I was also asked by a friend and co-collaborator who I finally met in person, Hilke Faber, to do a show called Connected Teamwork. And so it's all about interviewing leaders at different organizations and different industries about how they create a culture and nurture a culture of connectedness with their teams and ultimately head off limiting beliefs. It's just been so rewarding. And, you know, I do a couple episodes a week and, you know, you look back on a body of work and like, if I look up myself on a search engine or if I look up myself on YouTube and find all this great, rich content and experiences, I mean, it's like a masterclass that these folks are giving me. So I'm so grateful for what it's turned into. And again, anybody can do it.
Yeah. I love the fact that you just give permission for people to do it. I also love the fact that you have stated what I have felt the entire time that I've been doing this podcast, which is I'm the masterclass student. Like, people don't understand, like, you put a lot into this, but every conversation, I learn more about myself and the other person and by de facto the universe. Right. And people ask, why do you keep doing this? You know, I think I'm close to 140 episodes of this thing. Nice. And you're right. I go back and I sometimes like have to look, I'm like, oh my, I'm scrolling when people are like, hey, can you give me an episode that you recommend? And I'm scrolling, right? I'm like, but it's interesting because you had mentioned AI before, and I want to kind of tie this back to this aspect. One of the things, and my spouse had this idea, which I thought was brilliant, was why not build your own custom GPT? Feed in every transcript that you've ever done from your podcast, feed in every LinkedIn article, every LinkedIn post, every blog post, everything you've ever written in a professional capacity. I hired a brilliant young man who just graduated from Claremont McKenna. He's going to get his master's degree. And he and I are building this custom GPT. And it is incredible, Carson. Like, I could ask questions based on the things that I've said, they've said, we've said, I've written. There's no human way for me to remember all that at all. Yeah. It's just impossible. And now I have this custom GPT that's private to me because people kept asking me these wonderful questions like, Bill, I've got a son who's about to graduate college and get his MBA. And he wants to know which episode he should listen to for this specific reason. And I'd be like, I scratch my head, right? You get the same thing. And now I have this beautifully crafted tool that allows me to give a beautifully crafted answer with accuracy. And I'm pretty pumped about that.
So powerful. I mean, the possibilities are endless. And, you know, I think the more we think about how AI can save us time and also just search the treasure trove that is content, you know, these are things that you and I have put out there in so many different ways and forms. And don't get me wrong, sometimes my perspective changes. I actually rewrote my first book and re-released it as an ultimate edition. For that very reason. Because my philosophies on a lot of things changed, making a move from being in a one call close call center environment to working in enterprise sales, you know, with very large organizations. You know, how would it not? You know, I was not focused on relationships when I was in my 20s. I mean, I was, you get on a call with somebody and you've got to close it right then and there, or you're not going to ever talk to this person again, versus now where it's all about earning the right to be a trusted advisor. And what's amazing is that that ability to very quickly go back, search these things, and then to almost in essence create like a digital twin that can answer these questions that you can, you know, ping and ask about how, you know, what's your take on this? What's your philosophy? I'm amazed too, because I see and talk to people that are, you know, building abilities to, in essence, have a digital twin out there posting for them in their style. And don't get me wrong, we talk about this on our show a lot. It's all about, there is a fine line. You have to make sure that you use it in ways that enhance and enable your authenticity. You know, that's the thing. I mean, I don't want it to write a book for me. I want it to mine things that I've said over the last 5 years that I think will be of value to my book audience and ultimately recapture those things so that I can enunciate on those points. But I would never have it write for me. And I think that's the key element is, you know, do the work, earn the relationship. AI might help you get in a room, but what you do after that is even more important, right?
Yeah, that's precisely why I also chose to have my first book that I published be poetry, because it is not something, at least, you know, as we understand it today, it is not something that can be mirrored, mimicked, or manufactured. And I do believe the thing that's going to keep us in our consciousness are things like grief and loss and empathy and dreams and love and, you know, all of these sensations, right? It's the sensation and the emotion that makes us human. I mean, plenty of Sam Altman interviews out there and people ask him, like, what's the thing that's going to keep us human? And he said emotions. And I find it to be a really interesting time to be a published author for the same reasons we've talked about, while at the same time exploring the power of things like, you know, how do I get to an answer faster based on everything that's already been shared out of my own consciousness, but is quite inaccessible because of our limitations of our human brain, right? And that part to me is pretty exciting, knowing how many lives that's going to change and touch and help.
It's incredible to see from a lens of working with nonprofits or working with healthcare organizations that are able to automate a process in a way that saves them time and money so that they can funnel more into their mission, or that can automate processes that take tasks off the plates of physicians and nurses. Those types of things, I believe, are immensely powerful. And while AI isn't new, but we're on the precipice of discovering a lot of new ways to leverage it to make our world better. And, you know, I also take a lot of heart. I love to read, and I have been reading this book called Factfulness. And what it's really all about is, if you were to get your news from really most news sources or your social media feed, as unfortunately some people do, you'd be led to believe that the world is just a cesspool and getting worse. But the reality is very, very much the opposite. And it's a data-driven study in humanity. And it really looks at the last several decades, last multiple centuries and compares data across multiple things like infant mortality rates and life expectancy and average income levels of the world. You know, it's not just about classes and rich and poor. It's really more about, you know, where there's four stages that in essence the world is in. And a lot of countries, whether you knew it or not, have advanced from some of the lower classed stages throughout the course of history. Mm-hmm. And the long and short of it is we're improving in nearly every metric as a global society. And I take a lot of heart in that. And I think it's powerful that we're coming to this place where technology can truly make lives better. And I love that there's so many people and organizations that are looking at how to do just that.
Yeah. I want to be conscious of time and make sure not to take too much of your time. So this question will be more based on curiosity. How does Carson recharge? How do you take care of yourself? I mean, you do a lot. I see you do a lot. I know I do a lot. I know what it takes. How do you recharge? Like, what's your restoration as someone who's a machine, right? You're a machine when it comes to content, creativity, connecting with people, offering advice. How do you restore?
I think it's all about finding the recharge in everything that you do. There isn't a lot of time to just meaningfully recharge or rest. I don't get as much sleep as I should. And I will admit fully that this isn't an area where I'm particularly great. However, there are ways to recharge during the course of days and moments and experiences. And I'll give you some examples. You know, I usually get up relatively early, and that's when I have my only alone time of the day. That's when I exercise. I might stream a show or, you know, do some reflection, do some reading, carve out my kind of daily non-negotiables. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'll make a short list of things that, you know, I have to get done before I get sucked into the minutiae of email and IMs, right? And then I'll, you know, jump into helping to get the kids ready for school and, you know, fed, et cetera. And then it's, you know, work for the foreseeable future. But I think what's great is that even during the course of that, you know, even though a lot of us are back to back during the day, I mean, there's time to step out that door and re-engage and, you know, be with my spouse and, you know, see my kids and, you know, just have different experiences throughout the day. Having conversations like this recharges me, Bill. Doing the podcast experiences recharges me. I said earlier, you know, the reason for my book being The Show Must Go On, sometimes throwing yourself into something that you love doing while everything else is in chaos can be the thing that recharges you. And I think that's why it's important to really parlay your passions into your work. You know, a lot of people talk about the dream job, and I think the dream job is hard to come by, but you can make your current job a dream job by finding things that you love and infusing them into what you do. You know, the beauty in most jobs is that they're not templatized, right? You can find ways to do things that set you apart and that make everybody around you better while still doing the things that you have to do in your role. Those types of things recharge me. You know, and don't get me wrong, you know, at the end of every day, my wife and I wind down, we're both exhausted, and we wind down together, usually with a mindless show or some conversation if we can muster it. But I think those are the key things is that, you know, yeah, I'm tired a lot, but I am fueled constantly by the rich experiences that I get to have and the people that I get to work with and learn from. And that stuff just keeps me going. You know, being mindful, being in the moment, those types of things recharge me. You know, not dwelling on things that went amiss or awry. Yes, learning from them and acknowledging them and showing up better to the next thing. But I'm not looking too far ahead and I'm not looking behind. And I think that helps me keep a charge at all times.
I love that. Thank you. Thank you for grounding us in that reminder. And I agree with you. I'm charged by the things that I get to do. I'm charged by this platform. I'm charged by this ecosystem. I'm charged by the fact that like some person I've never met takes a picture of my book in Quebec City and sends it to me. I mean, like, you know that feeling, right? It's hard to put into words, but it does recharge you. So I appreciate you reminding us of those. Those are all really important, you know, keystones, cornerstones, touchstones in life. Before I let you go, would love for you to just share where people can find all this amazing content, learn more about you. I mean, it's pretty easy. You just type in your name and it comes up, but remind people where they can find you on YouTube, LinkedIn, yeah, things like that.
Absolutely. You know, I love LinkedIn as a platform. I'm, you know, pretty active there. I do blog. I have a WordPress blog. You know, my books are available through Barnes & Noble, through Amazon, and there's a lot of content that is on YouTube and also on my website, which you can find at Carson V as in Vincent Hetty, .com. So, you know, lots of ways, and would definitely encourage people to connect. I love connecting with and learning from as many people as I possibly can. I like to think of, you know, LinkedIn and social as kind of like this gargantuan coffee shop, and everybody's there. So it's like those experiences are what you make of them. And, yeah, you know, I'm one of those people. Like it's funny, Bill, because I'm very introverted in life.
Ditto.
And there are times at the end of the day where I'm very drained, because during the day you have to, you know, sometimes conjure up this character, this persona.
Yeah.
Not to say that everything is an act, but it can be very draining to socially engage as much as people like you and I do. And but I think that's the thing, is you've got to be opportunistic with those things. There's so many people out there to learn from, and so many people out there that can, you know, with their experiences can enrich you. You said something earlier that really resonated with me, and, you know, it's the shows that we do, you know, I feel compelled to share all these great learnings that I'm getting from everyone with the world. And I can tell you so many times there have been situations that I've learned from these shows or whatever it is that has made me infinitely better. And I, you know, I'll bring up these things and I always credit my source. And it's like, wow, I did this amazing show with this person named Megan Reed. And, you know, she talks about ruthless discipline with your schedule. And, you know, I talk about these things a lot because all of them have made me better. Or another one that I did with a gentleman named Skylar Radcliffe, and it was all about being a multiplier. How can you be a multiplier and make others around you better? Those types of things really stick with me, and I've benefited from them a great deal. So please connect. Yeah. You know, I'd love to learn from your story if you're listening today.
Yeah, I really appreciate that. I will say, from this introvert who has to perform as an extrovert to you as the introvert who has to perform as an extrovert, I will say this, and we will end here. My 14-year-old self playing Nintendo and jamming out to Queen is one happy kid right now.
It's that I was about the same age. I remember vividly 1992, yep, when Final Fantasy II came out on the Super Nintendo,
yep,
and playing that and listening to the Queen soundtrack on repeat on a cassette tape.
Yeah.
Just phenomenal experiences. And it's amazing how, you know, music can transport you back, but how it can also get you through moments.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's got to be something sometimes. You know, we all face these crippling, debilitating moments, and, you know, something has to get you through. It can be a person, it can be a connection, and it can also be your connection to something. So, yeah, I love that we found that shared connection.
Yeah. And 1992, I was 14. So there you go.
There you go.
I appreciate you so much, Carson. Thank you for everything you do. Thank you for being an inspiration to me and to so many others. I cannot wait to cheer you on from whatever corner of the world I'm in. Keep doing what you're doing. Thank you, man.
Bill, I feel the same for you, and I can't wait till the next time that I'm in your,
yeah,
your
in town,
home city, so we can see each other.
That would be great. I'd love to treat you to lunch, dinner, or all the above. I appreciate it, Carson.
You're on. Thank you so much, Bill.
Thanks.
I appreciate you.